Okay, hello, good evening. It's just kind of amazing to me. I have been doing this now for going on 8 years, and still, every time I open my eyes, I have no idea what I'm going to say to you. It comes as much of a surprise to me as it does to you. If it comes as a surprise, it's as big a surprise to me. Satsang is an amazing phenomenon. I know that in the beginning, when I first met Gangaji and first got out of prison and started attending Satsang, I had all kinds of highfalutin ideas about what satsang might be when I was in prison. And when I got out of prison and started attending satsang, I retained those highfalutin weird ideas about what was going on in satsang. I thought that it was some kind of an event in which somebody who had attained what I wanted sat with us, and maybe if I were lucky, some overflow of grace might jump out on me. It never occurred to me that satsang was a conversation, you know, a give and take between the one sitting up there on the chair and the rest of us sitting there on the floor. That never occurred to me. It never occurred to me that the expression of satsang was, like every other conversation, something that changed and evolved over time. I thought that it was like the Word of God, right? I mean, hewn in stone. And whatever it was that the teacher said, that was it. There wasn't any room for that to change or evolve or even devolve at all. I see sometimes, particularly when I'm with larger groups, I see every once in a while I'll find somebody sitting there with a pencil and paper and writing down what I say, or I imagine they're writing down what I say, either that or they're maybe writing a letter to somebody or getting their blog ready. But writing down, you know, like really intently writing down what I say, and it is always quite amazing to me, because the things that I say, the words that I utter, the sentences that are constructed and come from me are really not very important. They're changing all the time. And this phenomenon of satsang I have come to see is very much a conversation. And here tonight in Ojai, it's a conversation that's taking place between me and this group of people. And in a week or so in Santa Monica, it'll be a conversation, seem to be a conversation, taking place between me and another group of people. And it's easy to think that since I am the common denominator, that I know what I'm talking about, and that what I say is like the Word of God, and everybody else is receiving it. But that's not so. I mean, maybe I am a low-rent spiritual teacher, but that's not so for me. I've been doing this again for going on 8 years, and what I have seen and discovered is that this conversation is always evolving, and that although reality is utterly, absolutely simple, unbelievably simple and unchanging, the discussions we have about and around reality since they never hit the mark, never. They are always approximations. Those conversations are always changing and evolving and revealing, hopefully, better what it is we come here for, which is to be finished with seeking and searching, wanting and not getting, to be finished with misery and suffering and ignorance and delusion. I have, in recent days, I have been speaking more and more directly and without adornment of the method that comes to us from Ramana Maharshi of self-inquiry, which I have come to see over these years with you to be not a spiritual practice at all, but more like a medicine. I have come to see that when Ramana and other great teachers have talked to us about the fact that our only problem is a false belief about what we are, that that's really what they mean. That it's not code for some other, more spiritual stuff, but it's really just exactly what they mean. The only problem we have is a false belief about what we are. And what we believe we are is our lives and our minds and our thoughts and our memories and our emotions and our relationships and our dramas and our desires and our attainments and our failures, our history, our memories, our expectations, our hopes, our fears. That's what we believe we are, our lives. And it's really perfectly understandable and justifiable that we should fall for that false belief that we are our lives, since our lives are so big for us. You know, our minds, the things that come to us, the things we think, our mistakes, our aspirations, our failures, our neuroses, our all of that are so big for us. They're what we're accustomed to paying attention to. We're always paying attention to what we want, what we don't have, what we need, what we think, what's right, what's wrong. I mean, these are the things that call us. Say, hey, look, this is me. So it's really understandable and it's really justifiable that we should believe ourselves to be our lives, our failures and our successes and so forth. Justifiable. It's just not true. And that's what they've always told us. It's just not true. And that is so incomprehensible. I mean, literally incomprehensible. The idea that I am not this life, that is so incomprehensible that it is almost impossible to transmit. It's almost impossible to convey by means of this conversation between you and I. Because as I say that, I mean, God knows what you think. I know, I kind of know what I used to think, but it wasn't at all what I see now. And I've come to see as a result of this ongoing conversation with you, because it's always with you, it doesn't matter what face and what shapes it is that are appearing within me and taking part in this conversation, it's always you. It's never anybody else. I mean, there ain't nobody else. And what I have come to see is the stark simplicity of reality and the stark strangeness to discover that this whole business of spiritual attainment, of what has been called enlightenment and realization and awakening and all of that stuff, has nothing whatsoever to do with my life. Nothing. Now, since I have such a long-standing and deep-seated belief that I am my life, I expect that if this boon that all of the great ones have spoken about comes to me, that my life will change. My thoughts will change. I mean, maybe they'll just disappear, right? I mean, that's what's supposed to happen. It's supposed to be no more thought, emptiness. Or if they don't disappear, at least, sure to God, they will get to be true and good, virtuous. And it must be that if I get what it is that I am supposed to be wanting, this realization business and so forth, it must be that it's going to affect my consciousness, my mind, my desires. My desires should go away, right? I mean, they should be gone. And my antagonism and my aggression toward the world, that should be gone too. And my confusion, that should be gone. And everything should be plain and clear and easy to see and fully understood. Should be an end to the questions. The nature of reality should be self-evident. And if I find myself still trying to get, oh, I don't know, more money or a better love affair or more something, more satisfaction, more something, a better mate, more respect. If I find myself trying to get that, I still have the only way I know to speak about these things to myself internally is to say what I just said, if I find myself trying to do this, as if this unfolding apparatus of getting and getting rid of keeping and not wanting, as if that were me. And I am shocked and disappointed and disillusioned and depressed to find that the game still goes on, that I have the same, maybe they changed, oh, everything changes, that's the nature of things, they change. But the same quality about them. I still feel aggression, and I still feel lustfulness, and I still feel envy and discouragement, and I still feel stupid sometimes. And I am so deeply imbued with the conviction, the unexamined, the unseen conviction that this apparatus is me, that I don't know how to speak of it except to say, I still do these things. No matter that the whole thrust and the whole point of all of the spiritual teachings ever has been to tell me, you are not what you think you are. You are not your life. And the only problem is the false belief that you are. This apparatus that feels stupid and wants and doesn't want and gets and doesn't get, that seeks and doesn't find. So it's customary, especially in this tradition, this Neo-Advaita, I think they're beginning to call it now. We've even got a title, Neo-Advaita. Especially in this Neo-Advaita tradition, it's customary for us to avoid speaking about outcomes. Like, just you are what you seek. You have never been anything else. You are what you seek. Find yourself and everything will be okay. And what about my life? Does that mean I'm going to be happy? I'm going to not want things? I'm going to not think anymore? Don't worry about that. Because it's so hard. It is so hard to say, and it is so hard to hear, that nothing whatsoever that occurs within my so-called life has any meaning, relevance, consequence whatsoever. It is not me. It has never been me. And all of my misery and all of my misunderstanding flows directly from this unseen, unexamined conviction that it is me. There is no part of it that is me. None of it. So, and of course, once again, we get into this huge paradox. But it's only a paradox within the limitations of human understanding. But it seems like a mystical, magical paradox that I can speak of me as if I were something and see that nothing whatsoever that answers to that word has anything whatsoever to do with me. And that as I enter into self-inquiry, the age-old and justifiable habit of looking into my thoughts to see whether I'm attaining what I hope to attain is just useless. So let me tell you something of what the outcome of self-inquiry is. What the outcome of the... Because what self-inquiry accomplishes is has nothing to do with your life. Has nothing to do with whether you age, whether you die, whether you feel good, whether you feel bad, whether you are stupid or smart or clear or empty or full or whatever. The purpose of self-inquiry is to rid yourself of the false belief that that's you. And to do that by looking at the truth of what you are, which is here, ever-present, never absent, undeniable, self-evident, and so forth. Now, what happens when that belief is gone? Well, so far as the apparatus that I have believed myself to be, nothing much, except that it always has changed. That's its most notable characteristic. It's always changing. But nothing much. It's maybe nothing much. There's nothing that you can look to within the apparatus of human consciousness and say, there it is, I'm awake. Because no matter what's going on in the apparatus of human consciousness, you have always been awake. You've never not been. And you'll see that. Quite to the contrary, what happens in my experience in the absence of the belief that I am my life is that the sense of a life and me as separate things vanishes. And quite astonishingly, my experience is that when the false belief is gone, I sink more deeply than I ever could have imagined into this life that I am not. without any stake in it whatsoever, without anything at stake. I don't transcend this life. The separation between this reality that I am and this delusionary apparatus that I have believed myself to be, that vanishes. And life reveals itself to be sweet, just as it is. The purpose of my life reveals itself to be my life, just as it is. I am the eyes and ears and nose and tongue of awareness itself. So the hard part is seeing through this justifiable conviction that something dramatic should happen to this apparatus that I believe myself to be as part of my spiritual attainment. The difficult part is trying to stop doing that. Just stop saying, well, yes, but I know, I can see what I am, but then I get lost again. I get off on some trip again. I get off on some wanting this, not wanting that. So what? Really, so what? And that's the hard part. But even that's only hard because we think that something has to be done about that too. This is the magnificence of Ramana's insight. And you have to see that Ramana was absolutely not a spiritual person. Ramana didn't have time to become a spiritual person. Ramana was 16 years old when he stumbled into reality. And the magnificence and the wonder and the hugeness of Ramana's gift is precisely the fact that all he suggests to us is that we look to see what we are, period. Not we look to see what we are in order that we can become better people. Not we look to see what we are in order that we can become fulfilled in this life and free of misunderstanding. But merely that we look to see what we are, period, as often as we can. And Ramana takes it for granted, as do I, that we already know what we are, so we already know where to look. We are this unchanging background that's always here, that never moves, that doesn't change, that doesn't get satisfied or dissatisfied. So the Ramana's method of self-inquiry, although it is laden with all of the baggage that comes along whenever anything happens within a spiritual context, this method of self-inquiry is not spiritual at all. It's absolutely practical. And it is for you to just look and see what you are. Not once and for all. Like, once I get it right, you know, once I get it right, once I really see, then it's over with. It's never over with. Why would it be? What would cause you not to want to look at yourself? So the beauty of Ramana is that. Brahmana doesn't care if you fix your life or don't fix your life. Brahmana doesn't care if you keep trying to become, brilliant or beautiful or thin or fat or smart or stupid. Doesn't care about any of that. All of those practices are okay. Your seeking after worldly wealth is okay. You're trying to stop yourself from seeking after worldly wealth is okay. The vacillation between those two, that's okay too. Your conviction that you are unworthy because you continuously get lost in some trip about being good or bad or whatever, that's okay. You're trying to get rid of that, that's okay too. There's nothing whatsoever that you can do or not do or try to do that's of any consequence at all. The only thing that you can do that has consequence is to look at yourself consciously, deliberately, with your eyes wide open, as often as you can. And the consequence of that is to destroy the false belief that you are your life by looking at the truth. What happens in your life already is not up to you. And it won't become more so because you rid yourself of the idea that you are your life. It won't become less so because you keep trying to make it more so either. You see what I mean? Right? What we're talking about here is so simple, so uncomplicated, so self-evident. And the moment we start talking about it, we get all complicated. I mean, really, I've been talking for what? A half an hour. Said nothing of any real value. So, I'm done. What do you want to talk about? And I'm even willing to talk about your life. But not much. The other thing about Satsang, and I think I started to say this and I may not have gotten it clear, Satsang teaches me. These meetings in Satsang with you teach me. They teach me how to teach you. How else could I learn except in conversation with you? And I've come to see, and this I didn't say, and I'm going to say it, and I'll probably be struck down by a bolt of lightning for saying it, because after all, we're not supposed to care about these things in the Neo-Advaita world. Here's the thing. I think that there is open before us the possibility of changing the world. There is open before us in this time, as there never has been in the past, the possibility of seeing an evolutionary leap in human consciousness. Not because of some ooga-booga alignment of the stars and the planets or anything like that, but because of the fact that there has appeared in our lifetime this teaching, this method of self-inquiry, this possibility of abandoning all of the trappings of the past and going right to the heart of the matter. This has appeared in our lifetime in a way that has never been the case before, so far as I know, and I've read a lot. And what else has appeared in our lifetime is the possibility of actually reaching every single human being on the planet with a suggestion to stop for a second and see what you are. And you see, this method doesn't require some lengthy period of support and development and supervision for it to do its work. It really doesn't. I mean, it's okay for us to get together like this, but I tell you, if you hear this once, and just once, really see what it is to look at yourself, you're through. I mean, that doesn't mean you're not going to go through all kinds of spiritual melodrama and wanting this and having bliss and having hell and all of that stuff, because that's just what we do. But you see, that really is beside the point. That can't hurt you, and it can't help you, none of that. And once you really get it, what Ramana has offered, once you really see that it really is possible for you in this moment to have the conscious, direct, immediate recognition of the reality of what you are, you're done. And we can move on to somebody else. It may take a little while for it to do its work, but it will do its work. So that, in my view, we are in a unique possibility in the history of humanity. The possibility of humanity as a whole ridding itself of this false belief. Now, what the consequence of that may be, God knows. I know that although I cannot say that this apparatus has become, oh, I don't know, the Buddha or the Christ or empty awareness or any of those kind of things, I do know that this apparatus doesn't have the inclination anymore to go out and rob banks or to get in shootouts with the police or to hate people or to try to fix people. I know that. And I know this too. I know from my own experience that we are all in this together. That the whole idea that there is this one here who is the teacher and the leader and the guru and the one who dispenses the light, and everybody else who is in ignorance individually seeking the light, is false. I know that. I know that there are not two minds anywhere to be found. Really, there are not. There are not two human consciousnesses anywhere to be found. And I know that the enormous effort of aggression and resistance that's required in order to maintain the feeling of separation, that goes with the false belief, that's gone too. And I know that so long as there exists anywhere in the world the thought, I am not free until I do this or get that or want this or don't want that, that thought is mine. I know that. And here we are. We're in this amazing possibility. Okay. I don't know what set me off on that, but I'll probably hear about it. But it's true. You know it's true. This whole idea of individual liberation is a lie. You can be finished in your own mind, in your own life, with the belief that you are this apparatus, but so long as that belief persists in the human consciousness, it persists in you and me. What happens when it's gone? You know, what happens when we leave off with the foolishness of trying to fix this phenomenon and that phenomenon, trying to fix somebody else's aggression, trying to make things right, trying to do the right thing, trying to make somebody else stop doing the wrong thing? What happens when we leave off with all of that and go to the heart of the matter, which is this belief that I am my life and that everything by God is at stake in this life? And I have to do whatever I can to protect myself and to make myself right. What happens when that's gone? What happens if George Bush no longer harbors the notion that he has to be right? Okay. So that's what I have to say. But really, what I really have to say, that's all, you know, that's all. I don't know what that is. What I really have to say is this, is that it starts right here with you looking to see what you are. Not in order that you can become good, but just in order that you can see the truth. Whatever the truth is. That's where it starts. And that's what Jesus Christ himself was trying to point to when he said that the truth will set you free. Okay? Okay. Yes. Come. I know your name, but tell me again.
Constantine.
Constantine. What a great name.
In practicing or in doing the self-inquiry, asking the question, who am I? A lot of times, I don't know if I'm proceeding correctly or in a manner that you're prescribing. Like I don't know how to check myself, to see if I'm on track with this practice.
That's right.
So, in small situations, if I'm driving, okay, I can ask myself when I'm behind the wheel, who am I? And okay, I'm a driver at that moment in time. But in many other situations, I don't know how to answer that question. So I guess what I'm asking is, how do I answer the question, who am I?
The purpose of the question is not to find an answer. And the reason for that is this. All our lives have been efforts to try to answer that question. If you reflect on it, you can see that everything you've thought, everything you've sought after, everything you've tried to be, everything you've tried to not be has been done in an effort to answer the question, who am I? Or to become something satisfactory. But the fact is that you already know what you are. I think what you are is a little bit easier to... is a word that's a little bit easier to point to the heart of the matter. And you already know what you are. So here's the thing. First of all, you're here, right? And that's always true.
It doesn't seem to be for me, because in my life that I lead, an ingredient is missing that I find here, and maybe a few other places.
What I'm suggesting to you is that that's not true. I can understand that it seems to be so. Okay?
Right.
All right? And that's okay. But that is the heart, the essence, and the core of self-inquiry, is to not take your word for the fact that there's something present here that isn't present in your life elsewhere, but to look and see what you are. Now, and what you are is here. You're here. So, it's okay, and it can even be useful to see that when you're driving, I'm the driver, and to look at what that is, what that feels like to be the one driving the car. What's more fruitful is to see whether or not you're here, then, and there, too. To see. I mean, because if you're not, then this is all bullshit. The whole business of Ramana Maharshi and the whole business of the false belief and the truth and all of that is all false. So to get to the heart of the matter is to see whether or not it's true. Like I ask you as we sit here, are you here? And you say yes. And you know it's true that you're here. I'm certain that you cannot put your finger on what it is that produces that certainty. But you know it. Right? Well, it's that certainty that is the truth of what you are. So, in whatever circumstance, then, it becomes possible for you to stop for just a second and see whether anything has changed. You know, I mean, John says, are you here? Am I here? And see if that's not true. Now, it's certainly the truth that you, as this apparatus of Constantine, will feel differently in different circumstances. You will feel a certain way here in Satsang with me, and you will feel differently when you're driving a car or when you're, you know, trying to make a living or whatever it is you're doing. That's certainly the case. These feelings, these states, they come and go all the time. That's the proof of the pudding, that the feeling that you have in Satsang is not true. I mean, it's good. It's not wrong. It's just not true because it's not there when you are somewhere else. Just as the feeling of something being missing isn't here when you're here in Satsang. But it's possible for you to see that the feeling of whatever it is that's present here in Satsang that you're referring to, of fullness or satisfaction or whatever, that is no different from the feeling of absence of something not being here when you were somewhere else. That essentially they're the same phenomenological apparition. They are a state. They come and they go. But you are always here. They are not. The good feeling in Satsang is not always here. The bad feeling outside of Satsang is not always here. But you are never absent. And it's that gives rise to the certainty that you are. Just that you are. So that's what you want to check when you're outside of formal satsang, is to see whether it is not so that there is that which never goes away. And that is what I am referring to when I ask you if you are here. Now, the other thing is that I know, because we've been in this satsang together for a while now, I know that you have seen what's real. I've seen you see it again and again. The only thing that matters in self-inquiry, and this is really important to hear, because it kind of, and I've said it before, but I want to say it in the context of the discussion about the fact that nothing that happens within this apparatus has anything to say about your spiritual nature. There's no confirmation or lack of confirmation to be found there. And that's this. The only thing that really counts here is intention.
Intention.
The only thing that matters is intention. If it is your intention to see the truth of what you are, you can't go wrong. You can, you know, go wrong for a time, or, you know, at this time or that time, or it may take you a while and so forth. But so long as it is your intention to see the truth of what you are, as, and sometimes you have different intentions, but you can have the discernment to see that when that's happening. As long as there is the intention present in you that recurs to see the truth of what you are, not to confirm that you are awareness or love or, you know, whatever, but to see the truth. You see the difference, right? So long as that intention is there, so long as that recurs from time to time, instead of the intention to confirm that you're something good, or the intention to get better in your life, or to fix your mind or whatever, those are okay, but they're just beside the point. So long as the intention is present and recurs to actually see the truth of what you are, without regard to what you find, everything else will be taken care of. You can't do it wrong. The no one, not me, not Ramana Maharshi, not God himself, can give you what you are or tell you what you are. No one. I can urge you to see it. I can try to give you a hint of what you're looking for or where to look for it, but there's no way in the world I can tell you what you are or give that to you. You have to see it for yourself. And the only thing that will take you there is the intention to see the truth. So that's what's to be honored. And all the rest of it, it's okay. Can't hurt you. Can't help you. Can't hurt you. Do you follow me?
Yes, yes. I just want to add that, in addition, like what I found was doing the self-inquiry kind of showed me all the roles that I play in my life or in the life of, that this personality leads in life, different roles.
Yes.
But none of them feel like you said, that's me.
Yes, that's right. That's right. That's the.
But I play many roles.
Yes, of course you do, and that it is a crime in the spiritual arena to try to persuade you that it's wrong to play those roles. That's a crime. Anybody that says that ought to be shot.
Thank you.
Okay. See, the roles don't have anything to do with it. Like you said, you know, as you proceed with the inquiry, it becomes really apparent that, yes, I play those roles, but, yeah, you know, it's not me. I mean, it doesn't feel like me. The outcome is certain, Constantine. You are absolutely on the right track. You will go, you will get off the track. It's okay. Okay. And see, I say that like I am the poster child for doing this wrong. I mean, really. And that's why I can say with such conviction that you can't do it wrong. As long as what you want is to know the truth, you can't do it wrong. You can't do it wrong. So I don't want you to become enlightened. I really don't. I don't want you to become awake. or self-realized, or, you know, sunk in bliss. I was watching a video on YouTube, of all places, the other day. Somebody has posted some old videotape of Ramana Maharshi, and it's fascinating to watch him. I'm not sure why, because you watch him and he's really not doing anything. You know, he's reading the paper or walking around or something, and there's this one shot where he's just sitting there, not doing anything, not bothering anybody. And the narrator, in a voiceover of awe and religious fervor, tells us that this is Ramana, sunk in bliss. I mean, it's just Ramana sitting there in a loincloth, kind of just sitting there. If he is sunk in bliss, then so are you, which is what he would say. We are so addicted to these spiritual ideas of states that come and go. We are so addicted to the idea, you know, I have known bliss, which is really cool. I have nothing whatsoever against it. But it's a state. And I have known the inclination to want to find out how I can make that state permanent, which is really laughable. Because, of course, if that state were, in the first place, if that state were permanent, it wouldn't be special anymore. It would be the same as me, here all the time, unchanging, unmoving. I have known the deep desire for enlightenment, for, you know, enlightenment, you know what I mean, right? Enlightenment, right? The 360 degree vision and seeing the whole show, the all of time and all of space here. But already you do. Already that's what you do. I have wanted to see the death of ego. I have tried very hard to see the death of ego, which of course is really absurd, because if you try to find ego, you'll find no such thing can be found anywhere. The Buddhists speak of the human condition, the human manifestation, as being, as consisting in the five, what's the word? Skandhas? It's not quite it. Anyway, huh? We compounds, yes. It's a word that means the five piles. It's like piles of manure or something. Right? Not ego, just, you know, a kind of gathering together of a clump. Five clumps of different kinds of stuff. Thoughts, conditioned behaviors, ideas. I have wanted to transcend my life. I've known that desire to leave it behind, to attain nirvikalpa samadhi. And then I saw that I attained Nirvikalpa Samadhi every night. Every night. The only thing to do, I swear to God, is to see what you are. I mean, it may not be the only thing to do, but it sure to God is the first thing to do. And if you don't do that first, nothing else you do is worth the powder to blow it to hell. See what you are. Be finished once and for all with the belief that you are your life. And see that you can't be finished with that belief by trying to get rid of it. Really? Okay, I'm going to get rid of that idea. You're finished with that idea by saying the truth. Only the truth. Okay, I'm done. Anybody have anything else they want to talk about? I mean, I'm happy to stay and talk about it. It's good to see you, Jan. I'm really surprised that you're not talking. I'm really happy about that. This is the proof of the pudding. Look at you. Okay then. Thank you for your attention. Really, thank you for your conversation. Thank you for joining with me in this investigation. And it's okay to pray for the world too. Really. See what you are. Stay there. Look for yourself. First, before everything else, look for yourself. I'm sure. Okay, yes. You never know. You might just say the thing that'll.
How do you feel about doing the self-inquiry on paper, like in terms of action verb? Like, I've tried it several times, and okay, I'm this. I'm a father, and when I get down
listen,
to
about, let me tell you. I mean, you can let me interrupt you just for a second. Let me tell you something that may answer your question. There is no end to what you are not. There's no, you know, like there's an ancient practice called neti neti, which is to say, I am not this, I am not that, I am not my thoughts, I am not my, it gets, you know, I'm not my excretions, I am not my this.
What I found was after I get to about, I don't know, 10 or 15 verbs, like I'm a hiker, I'm this, I'm that. I can't go on anymore. Like I stop and how shall I say? It's almost as if for a few seconds I experience a meditative effect from doing that.
Anything that will bring you to, and I'm not talking about a meditative state. I'm talking about the eyes wide open, conscious recognition of what you are. Anything that will bring you to that as often as it as you can is self-inquiry. Anything that brings you to a momentary, eyes wide open, conscious recognition of what you are is self-inquiry. It is the eyes wide open, conscious recognition of what you are that does the work. Do you hear that? And anything that brings you to that for a moment is self-inquiry. There is no form of self-inquiry that is, this is the right form and that's not the right form. It is that, but that's what you're after. Is as often as possible to have this eyes wide open, conscious, certain recognition of what you are. And that does the work. That does away with the false belief that you are other than that. Okay? And any other practices, you know, it's not to say that you have to stop all your other practices either. But just see what is self-inquiry. Have the discernment to see that self-inquiry is that which brings you face to face with yourself. The rest of your practices do other things, and they're okay. You know, you have material practices, you have spiritual practices, you have all kinds of practices. Brushing your teeth in the morning is one of your practices. And, you know, but just see, have the discernment to see that self-inquiry is something aside from, different from. It's something very special, if you will. It is that which brings you face to face with yourself. And anything that does that is self-inquiry. That gives you that, ah, yes, that's me. That's self-inquiry. And it's that recognition that does the work of dissolving the false belief. Okay? Okay? Yes?
Hi. You mentioned prayer.
Yeah. That's another practice.
Okay.
It's not self-inquiry.
Okay.
It's a practice.
Yes.
And it's a good practice. There's nothing wrong with it.
Okay.
You know, it can't help you and it can't hurt you. But who knows? Maybe prayer does something, softens human consciousness or something.
Okay.
Who can tell?
Okay.
Can't hurt.
It feels good.
It feels good.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with feeling good.
Yeah.
Really.
Thank you.
Okay.
No, thank you for this.
Okay, you're very welcome. Really. Okay? Okay, then, let's do this one more time. You know, there is a tendency, there's always a tendency to become kind of liturgical in these kind of things. And that's okay too. That doesn't hurt anything. It doesn't help anything. It's just in the nature of the human apparatus to kind of enjoy liturgy. Which is why I almost always end satsang in the same way, which is to say, may all being know itself. Just that. That's my prayer. May all being know itself. Om Shanti. Thank you for the satsang.